Welcome back in. Hour number three.
Fantastic.
It's been a fun little show so far. What's there been to talk about? Not much going on in the old news. Nothing big's happened lately.
I have tiny legs and I'm fat.
That's been in the news. We got the mail sack coming up 1 hour from now. If you got any questions, you can get them in 503-864-6326. You can send them in on Twitter, on the YouTube chat as well. Sports, non-sports, whatever you want to throw at us, we will answer coming up 1 hour from now.
Has anything gone well for Ja Morant since he told Malika Andrews, I'm fine in the West?
New.
I feel like that and the poke bears moment kind of
ended the run,
very brief run of. And by the way, Gary Parrish highlighting, they were the number one for the 5 years pick a team in ESPN.
Buying futures of the next 5 years.
You don't buy 5 years of any futures.
No.
I said this yesterday. At max, you buy three. You shouldn't buy more than two, probably.
Yeah, buying more than two is a bit of a problem there in Memphis. Ja Morant is now in a Blazer uniform. So mail sack coming up an hour from now. We will get to John Isaacs at 8:45. He's a P1 of the show and happens to be on the inside of some of the negotiations going on between the city, the county, Tom Dundon, the Blazers, and all of that. And so we just were curious of an update. How concerned should we be about the idea? Everybody, you know, I got random radio people telling me, or former radio people telling me, they're as good as gone. I got a columnist telling me that they're going to leave if a deal doesn't get done. Where are we at? How concerned should we be? What do we need to know about the process? That's coming up at 8:45. I do have a hard time today, I will admit. I had a couple NFL things in the notes that I wanted to get to. We had some Bills topics from yesterday that we didn't talk about.
We can still do that. Pair it with Diana Rossini saying J.J. McCarthy sucks.
Dude, yeah, that I almost want. Yeah,
the random straight J.J. McCarthy involved in the sex scandal.
The Diana Rossini thing needs to get talked about. I also, can I request a motion to hold it until we can give it proper time? Because I almost want to play the entire audio clip. The whole thing? Have you listened to the whole thing?
Yeah, watched it twice.
I mean,
wow.
That is some of the douchiest behavior I have ever seen from a human being in my life.
Look, there was a lot of takes early in the Vrabel-Rossini mess, and some of it was like, she'll be back, Barstool, you know, destiny.
She hadn't done anything yet.
I would argue she should be done. And I don't care what level of the sewer you operate in the media landscape.
That is the douchiest level of behavior for anyone.
She's never having sources again. That's
no.
Over because everybody's going to assume she's sleeping for it.
Yes.
All the intel on this is just incredibly, it's so wrong. Being pregnant, getting on a boat, naming the child the same name as the affair.
I mean, yeah.
And then this video comes out of, dude, by the way, the cop just like,
He ate it up.
He ate the entire thing up.
I saw that yesterday and I'm like, oh my God. And some people try to say that it exonerated her because she didn't do something because I think the allegation was she FaceTimed somebody and was like, she didn't.
She showed the text.
She immediately texted the head coach of the Vikings in front of a cop to impress him to get out of a ticket. Get out of here with that nonsense. I think on a day like today, and especially as we go into free agency opening today at 3:00, it will open. The Blazers have cap space. They have some money to play with. They have the full mid-level exception. They have open roster spots. So, do we get a move this afternoon or do we got to wait a day or two? I don't know how quickly everything will transpire. They're such a big topic right now, and yesterday's move was so shocking and ground-shaking, if you will, because nobody saw it coming. Mm-hmm. I hope it's another reminder for us, and I have to learn this too, because there are times, and you joked about it to start the show, recently, I have been glued to social media because you're just waiting, like, when's it going to happen? All these rumors, all these reports, this team's interested. It seems like we're getting closer. There's a lot of smoke there, and you're just refreshing, waiting to see the news.
Yep.
And then yesterday, I'm not even on social media. I see it like 4 minutes after it happens, and you go, oh, my God, okay, there it was. I didn't need to be refreshing every 90 seconds. I found out about it, and I reacted to it when I found out about it. But I hope the lesson that we do learn, and this is true of some local people and a lot of national people in particular, it was another great reminder, not with every move that happens in the NBA, but largely ours over the last handful of years. Nobody has any clue what the hell they're talking about, and nobody has any sources. There wasn't a single person alive.
Not one.
Not one person alive.
Not one. No
and
indication.
How many of these examples now can I go down? And it was a great reminder of me of like unplugging from, would you see what Mark Stein said? And I'm not taking a shot at Mark Stein. He's a great reporter. He's plugged in and connected to the NBA. I get it. Who had us drafting Jan Hansen in the first round last year?
Oh, nobody. Not a soul. Only one person had Young in the first round.
Who had Dame to Milwaukee instead of Miami? We all just assumed the Miami slop's going to happen. Nobody had that. Nobody in their mind saw us trading for Ja Morant yesterday.
No, certainly.
When we had two first-round picks, one of them we just traded out in Chris Murray, and the other one was Shaedon Sharpe, what were we going to do with those two first-round picks?
You mean Scoot.
Or Scoot, excuse me. What were we going to do with those two picks?
Trade it.
Yeah. How did that work out? Did we trade the picks?
We drafted two guys.
So, like, everything that's been from an insider perspective that has been reported
has been
over the last 5 years with Joe Cronin has not been correct.
Yeah.
And it was a reminder for me of yesterday of like, unplug, wait for the news to come out. Mm-hmm. You'll get it. We'll assess it when it happens. But like waiting, you know, on every crumb from a Kevin O'Connor or a Jake Fisher or a Mark Stein, not to take shots at those guys because they're all good at their jobs. At the end of the day, they only know so much information.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think a lot of those guys are passing what they hear. I don't know if they're sitting there telling you with a certainty.
I'm not saying it's a mislead. Yeah,
no,
I get what
you're saying, though. And I think it's an important note to bring up. Like, I saw a lot of stuff yesterday and the last couple days. And it was, you know, how does Joe move? Joe moves in silence.
In silence.
And I thought, you know who else moved in silence? Neil Olshey.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're acting like this is some new revelation for the Blazers that the guy that literally worked under Neil Olshey for a decade
is doing the same thing.
Is doing the same thing because you know what? There's nothing wrong with moving in silence.
No.
I don't have a problem with it. In fact, I found myself yesterday, I was trying to get away from, look, there's a lot of questions. There are certainly some negatives potentially with this. Yesterday was exciting and fun, and I have no clue if it's going to mean anything on the basketball court, if it's going to make them better. I think you could certainly make a case they got better, but you can also counter the case and say they got worse defensively, and I won't argue that.
It made me feel something yesterday, and there's been a lot of times I haven't felt anything as a Blazer fan.
They lost an all-time, literally an all-time great off-court dude, and they brought in one with real red flags and question marks. There is not a doubt in my mind. But it was so exciting to be at the forefront of the NBA conversation. It was so exciting thinking, like, how the hell is this going to work? It was so exciting wondering, what's the next move? Is there a next move? Are we leaning into just trying to be a bunch of Brunsons in the West against Wemby? Like, I don't know. I don't know. But your point on nobody knowing, I can't tell you how many things I've heard they're going to do and the opposite happens or it never happens in general.
It never happens.
So, like, they just don't operate in a space that gets messy. In fact, if you made me pick, who do you think the noise was coming from between Boston and Portland?
Yeah.
Boston.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was Stevens. I think it's Jalen. I think a lot of it's messy and it's awful and Jalen wants to be traded and he's liking comments that say, oh, go to a city that loves you, and Blazer fans are going, we love you.
We love you, Jalen.
I think there's a lot of that. So it's not perfect. You can certainly question the moves by the organization. But them moving the way they do, boy, it makes yesterday, you talk about crowd pops, just like social media, what the F pops left and right from that move. And you're right. It's not to dismiss the information.
No.
Maybe the information that Jrue Holiday is now no longer being shopped because they need him. Maybe that's incorrect.
This is the part that I just chuckle about. So the Jrue Holiday thing is great because I wanted to get to the guards and, you know, how does this go from here and who do they trade? And the Jaylen Brown stuff as well. Like, I think a lot of my assessment of this trade as time goes on will turn into what ends up happening with Jaylen Brown. Is Jaylen Brown traded?
What's he traded for?
What's he traded for? Who is he traded to? What's the package look like? And if that seems like a package that we could have matched and we needed the Jeremy Grant salary to get it done, and we just chose not to because they wanted Klingon or Tumani, and we said no.
Feels like that's the sticking point between them.
That would be an issue for me. But maybe Boston internally has shopped this for a week and thought, you know what? Dude, Desmond Bane went for 5 first-round picks last offseason, and people are only offering us 4 for Jaylen Brown. He's under contract for 3 more years. Why the hell are we going to trade him? Maybe they've just decided they don't have to trade him.
They could very well keep him.
They don't need to.
He'll show up and he'll play.
Yes, he's not going to hold out and not show up and play for the Celtics next year. And so that's the part of it that it's just like time will tell as things go on. But I'm glad you brought up the Jrue trade point. Because when the analogy came...
Jrue.
Sorry, did I say that too fast?
You said that kind of quick.
My apologies. The Jrue trade point.
Jrue.
But it's funny because if you're the Blazers...
Yeah.
And you're shopping Jrue Holiday, do you want the information out there that you're shopping Jrue Holiday?
No.
right? Doesn't it behoove you to keep that a little bit silent? One, so you don't, I mean, I don't think Drew Holiday cares at this point in his career. He's older. He's been traded a bunch of times. Like, he's been through it. I don't think it spoils the relationship. He understands it. Mm-hmm. But it's also like, what if, using the Jaylen Brown example, what if that trade doesn't go through? What if you don't find somebody that wants Drew Holiday, and then on opening night he's on your roster? And just like to save yourself a little bit of discomfort, that kind of stuff, it serves you a purpose to not have it out there because you don't want players to get upset and you don't want everybody to know exactly what you're trying to do. If we were to gamble on a guard, Scoot Henderson, Shaedon Sharpe, Drew Holiday, what odds, like give me the Vegas odds of them being in a Blazer uniform next year from highest, like the most long shot to the easiest option to trade.
Easiest option to trade to me is actually Shaedon.
Is it because of the contract?
It's the contract.
Because of the athletic ability?
It's the ceiling is higher. It's the athletic ability. It's the age. It's the fit. None of it has worked. He's never been given the full green light. He's been benched. He's been started. He's been benched again. He's not been trusted to play high-level playoff minutes. It's the attitude. It's the question marks with the idea that new place, new surrounding, new environment, and you hit on the high-end ceiling of it. What is that? It might be Andrew Wiggins. I don't actually personally think that's a bad thing. I don't know why we poo-poo Andrew Wiggins. He helped the Warriors win a freaking championship.
Really good.
Maybe that's the high end of him, but it's him. Scoot. Rookie scale contract, maybe he's included for somebody that's not super expensive with picks, but if you're making me power rank it, it's Shaedon. I probably go Scoot second, even though that might be a mistake because of Drew's money, but I'd go Scoot second, Drew third, because Drew has more versatility defensively. Now, if you do that, you cannot in good conscience come on the air and make fun of the Miami Heat for wanting to go super old with Giannis when we're going to be rolling out Dame off the Achilles at 36, Drew Holiday at 30, what, 35, 36?
35, somewhere in that range. Like, Ja's not old, but he's also banged up over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So we're not sure about where the health is at.
There's just three key guys. Now, you have Donovan, you got Tumani, you'd still have Denny, right? Those are young guys. But you can't be making fun of other teams if you're rolling out three really important players and they're all in their mid-30s or they're super injury-prone and problematic off the court the last 3 years.
Yeah, the balance of the reaction to the trade is just really difficult because you don't know what the full picture is going to look like and exactly what the roster will, how it will take shape. One of the biggest concerns I did have in the job, you know, news yesterday, outside of obviously the 79 games in the last 3 years and we know about the troubles that he's had off the floor, is, and we talked to Gary Parrish about this in the last hour, you have a first-time head coach, and we're putting a lot of this on, like, Lillard. Well, Lillard will take him under his wing, and Lillard will solve this, and it won't be an issue.
I just don't think that's how this league operates.
Always a guarantee, man. Like, some guys don't ever figure it out.
This all the time in sports. When are we going to learn that most of the time there is no mentorship program?
No.
Dame Lillard's going home. He's got three children at home. John Morant's in his 20s going to the egg crop.
He's got issues off the floor. He's dealing with this himself right
Good
now.
God, they live different lives. Yes. It's crazy how we run to that every time in every sport. He's got to be mentored. We got a great coach.
Take him under his wing.
Kawhi Leonard hated Greg Popovich.
He did. That never really worked out, did it? Greg Popovich got along with everybody, didn't have any problems. And then Kawhi Leonard and his family came around, and that became a bit of an issue. But it's that point of, like, Ja Morant is going to be a part of your plans here the next 2 years. What do you have taking over as head coach? A guy that's never been a head coach before. Now, I'm still super in on the Nouri hire. Mm-hmm. I loved his press conference. He's worked with some big personalities and I'm sure some tough players throughout the course of his career. Mm-hmm. And he can harken back to, man, the lessons I learned from this guy or that guy. Mm-hmm. And this guy listened and this guy didn't. And he's got all those experiences with 28 years behind a bench. But that is a big wild card in this. At the end of the run in Memphis, Taylor Jenkins was one of the more, I don't even follow basketball that closely outside of the Blazers, and I know Taylor Jenkins was one of the more respected coaches in the league, and it got ugly between Ja Morant and Taylor Jenkins, and the Grizzlies tried to pivot and make him happy and change the system and fire the coach and let's shake things up, and that certainly obviously didn't work because now they've blown everything up, and Taylor Jenkins is now coaching for Milwaukee. Of just, it's a very big unknowable in this situation of not only does Ja Morant stay clean off the floor and are there no issues, but what is he like inside the locker room? What is he like inside of practice? What is he like to his head coach? Because he's going through this for the first time, never doing it before. And that, to me, is a massive wild card of this, of if he's causing problems in the locker room, there's going to be big problems there.
I think Hyken pointed it out that, like, when you look at Dundon and Carolina, and I know hockey is not basketball.
Hi, you shut your mouth.
Might as well not be the same, you know, it might not be categories the same. It's not sport compared to basketball.
Shut your mouth.
Dundon did do the buy low on guys with questionable character thing. Now, not a lot, but a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
So him buying low or saying, Joe, if you want to buy in on this, I'm in. Like, I'll support the move. This guy's high end when he's good, and we'll see what it's like. The organization yesterday, because the Shams reporting is that this is their move. Now, maybe they got another move in their pocket because they got the assets. That, to me, is clearly them internally telling you their culture set. They are not concerned at all. They trust what is happening in their building for a guy like that to come in and not have these same concerns. I think it's also paired with the gamble of what you said earlier. Hey, Ja, your shoe actually is pretty popular, but you're not, and we can't really feature you in commercials. And when the league tells you to stop the gun stuff, you actually have a bigger gun in your celebration. It's a very odd decision you're making there.
We went from pistols to a shotgun. That took a wrong turn,
Can you not punch high schoolers in the face because they talk a little less at your estate? This is the gamble of our culture's good.
Yeah, we feel like we can fold him in.
And he is desperate to turn everything around. And he'll be rewarded in Portland if he does. And if he still ends up working out, but we pivot another way because somebody wants to offer him some max contract that we don't, then it worked. So they're betting on the next two seasons, year and a half really, of saying, we trust what we have established, what we have, who we have, and we'll take the gamble of this is this dude's kind of last chance. Maybe not to be in the league for two more years, but to largely have the league look at you in any way of, yeah, we'll give you $100 million.
Yeah.
There's another payday coming.
I mean, he is, it's crazy to think. He's 26,
he's
about 26 to turn 27.
Years old. Yeah.
He's going to be 28 by the time he hits free agency.
Mm-hmm.
28. Now, maybe that's re-signing in Portland because things go great. Maybe it's getting a payday somewhere else and we don't want to, nobody knows how the future is going to hold out there. You're going to get another, if you play at a high level, if you return to some form of the level that you were at, there's a massive payday waiting. If you stay out of trouble
and you're
off the
super
floor,
off the court, like you got a good reputation building in Portland,
yes.
Like, yeah, you're going to get that payday.
There's another $100 or $200 million contract in your future because you're only 28 years old.
Yeah.
And so it's just, how that all shakes out is going to be really interesting. And it's a challenge for a new head coach, but I tend to agree with you that there's a belief in. And one of the biggest, compliments you could give the current regime and what they've built is that it does seem to be a close-knit group. It does seem to be a group that gets along. You have good veterans inside the locker room, guys like Dame and Drew who've been through a lot and seen a lot of things. Now, is everybody still a part of the picture next year? That is what is still to be determined, but just the hope of that you can fold that in. And this is where, going all the way back to the start of the show, I just chuckle and laugh. Like, the notion that this is the Jailblazers is just ludicrous. It's not true. You don't have anybody else on the roster who has ever been in trouble off the floor.
Well, he's never been arrested.
He's also never been arrested. He hasn't, come on, man. Yeah. I get that there's a quick analogy there because we all saw the documentary recently, and it was fun to relive those days. But this idea that all of a sudden you're the Jailblazers again, can we please, for the love of God, stop that?
Here's the thing I would say, too. As I joke about the Dame mentorship thing that people run with, what I would say is it's not so much like Dame having Ja Morant stay in his guest house. The one thing I've always admired about Dame as a player, aside from his skill set, is almost instantly, the minute he's drafted as a rookie at 22, he's coming into a established star player organization with a good track record in history that hadn't quite done something in a long time in winning a playoff series, but had a really good reputation. And in no way at any one point did he allow the league and the money to corrupt behavior and feeling and thought. Go back to the LaMarcus run, right? When it ended. Who was the moody one there?
Right, it was LaMarcus.
LaMarcus had been in the league for how many seasons?
Right, he'd been around for a long time.
Dame's like, yo, let's go hang out as a team. And LaMarcus is like, yo, I'm going to stay in my hotel room.
Flying by himself back from Memphis after losing a playoff
series.
Because
he doesn't like that Dame's featured on a billboard or the Moda Center photo. Like, whatever it was LaMarcus. It wasn't Dame. And from that point on, no matter what you think about Dame as a top-end player or whatever, from Portland to Milwaukee to back to Portland, the dude just is never, he's always measured. I am more aligned with the Ja Morant, Gary Parrish. I have my days where I can be a little moody. And
we all do, man.
Yeah.
It's
and like
life.
Whatever. Sometimes it breaks over and it shouldn't. That's perfectly normal. It's very hard to find people that don't. They're measured at every moment.
Yeah. And when steady they come and you in, bring it every day.
They're the same at all times.
Yeah.
And that's at least something Ja Morant is going to witness. Jrue Holiday, Dame Lillard, right? These are guys that are going to come in and every single day probably be the exact same.
Yeah.
They will never be like moody back to him, or they're moody when he's not, or he's moody and then they're, you know, it's always going to be, what up, Ja? Same. Even killed. And that's what I think the organization is banking on, is just having him around the environment, the culture, and then, oh, by the way, you need to stay good here. And if you can, it's going to you're going to be rewarded big time with it.
You can be an incredible redemption story if that is to happen. We got a lot of poll questions up at Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. Which of these three sports takes would have shocked you the most 3 years ago? Ja Morant's a Blazer, Sam Darnold won a Super Bowl, or Indiana won the national championship? We got, do you agree that the Blazers' four guards of Dame, Ja, Holiday, and Scoot can coexist? And does getting Ja Morant make you more excited about the Trail Blazers this upcoming season? You can go vote on all those at Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. Going to put a quick pin in this. Let's take a little palate cleanser and talk some NFL football, because there's a handful of things in the notes in the news recently. We'll get to John Isaacs coming up at 8:45. And then the mail sack at the top of the hour. Your questions are welcome at 503-864-6326. Some NFL talk next, 105.1 FM The Fam. All right, we still got a lot to get to on the show. Mail sack coming up about 30 minutes from now. Get your questions in. 503-864-6326. Sports, non-sports, whatever you want. The Sparta TRT mail sack coming up at the top of the hour. I do want to cleanse our palates a little bit. You guys want to cleanse your palate together?
Yeah, dude.
A little bit of breath of fresh air for a moment.
If it's football or football, I could talk any of those. I don't know if I really want to talk about baseball right now. My team is incredibly banged up. Their back half pitching staff sucks, and we are terrible.
You don't want to talk about Kirk Herbstreit going scorched earth on the game of baseball yesterday?
We had a Kirk Herbstreit crossover?
We had a Kirk Herbstreit social media meltdown yesterday.
You know my Kirk Herbstreit social media thing.
Yes, he blocked you on Twitter.
I am blocked by Kirk Herbstreit on Twitter. I cannot see what Kirk Herbstreit... Yes, Brandon, that's true. It happened.
Yeah.
All over Royce Freeman. Because he dare call out Royce Freeman's loyalty to the program at Oregon when they played in the...
You ready for this?
What bowl game was it?
That was the Vegas Bowl, I believe.
The Vegas Bowl against Boise. Royce Freeman was like, I'm good. I'll just go to the NFL. It's my last year.
His head coach had literally just quit or moved on a week earlier. They had an interim coach.
And so Herbstreit was like, loyalty, what happened to this country? I was like, you're an idiot. He's been there 4 years. He's one of the more decorated backs they've had. He's had a good career. He wants to get ready for the NFL. Who cares about the Vegas Bowl? Blocked. It's like, really?
Now you've sent me down this rabbit hole, and I have to read the tweet, and then we'll get to our football stuff. There was a random tweet about Jorge Posada, saying, I can't watch today's baseball.
Can I give you very quickly?
Yes. You have a Jorge Posada take?
Maybe in my top 15 most hated athletes.
Ooh, that's a good underrated hatred right
there. I
hate
everything about Jorge Posada.
Just anti-Jorge Posada.
I just so anti-Jorge Posada. Well, wear gloves.
He gave a take about how today's baseball is unwatchable. He did the whole, like, you know, swing for the fences launch angle. This is boring.
He went David West on him, huh?
He did. Mm. Said today's game sucks. Kirk Herbstreit gave in all caps, thank you! That's how I read it. And then he went on to say, where did the athletic ability go? Clutch hitting in the eighth and ninth inning. Starting pitching that goes eight or nine innings. Base stealing. Hell, just good base running and speed. Sack bunts, moving runners over. Where's Tony Gwynn, Rod Carew, Wade Boggs, Ichiro? Those guys wouldn't exist in today's ridiculous home runner K launch angle game. The game's been dying with the youth of America for years. It's losing its core fan base as well. It's this ridiculous product we've had to digest for the last 7 to 10 years. Bring back small ball and athleticism. This bleep is dreadful. That was Kirk Herbstreit's tweet yesterday.
I mean, didn't Ichiro play in this era? Like,
I'm pretty sure he did, yeah. I think he was playing 10 years ago. The last 7 to 10 years. I think Ichiro played until like a month ago. He was still, you know, still playing in Japan for the Mariners over there.
People got thoughts on baseball. They're not all the way wrong with some of the stuff.
Lot of the analytic stuff is ridiculous.
That guy wants to pop off about a sport being broken.
Let him do his John Moran. Is that what you're saying?
You want to pop off and do this? You want to talk about college football? Oregon has Maryland on their schedule in Maryland.
That is true,
and it's a conference game.
We played at Rutgers last year in a conference game in Piscataway, New Jersey.
Stanford is in the ACC.
What does the ACC stand for?
The Atlantic Coast Conference.
Where's Stanford on?
On the West Coast. Pacific Coast Conference. They should be in the PCC.
That one made me
what
chuckle.
What are we doing?
That one made me chuckle. No, let's get to a couple of NFL nuggies, not get distracted by baseball here because my team also blows. Can we ask the question collectively? Can we all come together and ask a simple, point-blank, what took you so long?
Hmm.
So the Bills are opening their new stadium at the start of the year. Their new, are they calling it Highmark still? Is it still Highmark Stadium?
What's Highmark?
That was their old stadium name. I didn't know.
I thought it was Marv Levy Stadium.
Marv Levy. That actually would be nice. It should be Marv.
Be.
Should be Wide Right Stadium. Sorry,
naming rights
soon.
Are overrated.
And in their new stadium, they have their, like, you got to put your Walk of Fame back up, right? In their old stadium, they had their Walk of Fame. You walk through, and there's, you know, look at all these great moments in Bills history.
How much did they charge? Because when I went to the Niner game, unfortunately, it was like, I think it was $50 to walk through
the Hall of Fame
Niner
thing.
Museum.
Yeah, that's
which I regret not going. Next time I go, I'm just going
to
pay it.
You would to go see it walk through?
I didn't do it at the time.
Yeah.
But I thought about it on the way back, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm coming back. I should have done it.
How big is it? How many cool things are you actually seeing in there?
You're seeing all the trophies. Seeing all the – I mean, it's not stuff that's like going to blow my mind, but like also I'm there when in Rome.
Well,
it's clearly a money grab, but – why not?
Well, in their Wall of Fame at the new stadium, one of the players from their old stadium's Wall of Fame will not be included. The Bills have made the brave decision, finally, in the year of our Lord 2026, to say, you know what? It's a bridge too far. O.J. Simpson, no longer on the Wall of Fame. Better late than never, or what took you so long?
Well, he was on it last year.
I mean, literally.
In the stadium.
In their old stadium. Yeah. Their only reason they're taking him down is because they're building a new Wall of Fame, and they decided, you know what, this is probably the time now to get rid of him.
Can you separate art from artist in that regard? Like, knowing what OJ was, or who he really is, like.
Yeah. Murder's a bit of a difficult bar to get over.
Innocent.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. But if he had done it, he wrote a book about how he wouldn't have done it.
Yep. Definitely not weird at all to write that 4 years after you murdered your wife and her lover.
I mean, we all know he killed him. We all know that he did.
We all know
that he was guilty.
Yeah.
I know that he wasn't found guilty in a court of law.
Yeah.
I get that there is a separate art from artists. I certainly
do that in some aspects of life,
not in murder.
But they were doing this for years.
They have been.
They never took him
down.
You
know who else is still doing it? USC.
Yeah, they have still 32 jersey as the Heisman winner.
Which is hilarious to me because, and we were talking about this with a coworker yesterday, I get in a place, if you had not that many, like Oregon only has one Heisman trophy in the history of their program. There's only one. It's
right.
Marcus Mariota. If Marcus Mariota did what O.J. Simpson did, that would be a very difficult, like, man, that's the only one we got. Do we really want to erase our Heisman history?
Hold on.
That's drastically different than having...
No, it's not.
How many
You're doing a whole thing where you're okay with Marcus killing somebody, but not O.J. Simpson?
He was great before. How many Heisman trophies does USC have?
Oh, I don't know.
They have more than anybody.
Oh, do they?
Yes!
I don't know the count. I'm
Let me
sorry.
See the count. Hold on. Let me Google it.
I would have thought Notre Dame, when they reeled off like 8 straight titles in 1942.
Had like 18 of them.
Yeah.
Let's see. By school, I'm pretty sure USC has the most. I shouldn't have just said that out of pocket. They
like
do.
A Wally Pipsqueak Williams from Notre Dame.
USC has 8. Notre Dame has 7. So they're up 1.
There
Ohio State has 7. Oklahoma has 7.
Okay.
Mike Garrett in 1965, O.J. Simpson in 68, Charles White in 79, Marcus Allen in 81, Carson Palmer in 02, Leinart in 04, Reggie Bush in 05, and Caleb Williams in 2002. When Caleb won, that put them, they have more Heisman trophies than anybody.
Does the Reggie one count again?
It does count again. That one
did
not count, and now it counts again. O.J.'s is always counted.
So O.J., don't have him. Marcus Mariota committing the same crime, okay.
He's the only one we have.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
We're not getting rid of our only Heisman Trophy. We can't throw that out. We got to keep our only Heisman Trophy. When you have 8 of them, you can afford to go down to 7.
Dude, but how do you ever celebrate it? Like, do you have Marcus Mariota Day?
You don't do a day. You don't do a day. It's just in the trophy case.
It's going to be a killer party tonight. Down in Eugene, Oregon.
Way too soon. Way too soon. Okay?
If Terry Baker had this.
He's your only one.
If
Terry Baker murdered 2 people, would you argue that Oregon State.
I don't want to live in this world.
Would you argue for Oregon State to get rid of the Heisman Trophy?
Well, you can't get rid of the trophy, but like.
Erase all memory of him.
It's still there. We're still going to see O.J. Simpson's name under the Buffalo Bills.
Are we, though? Because they're erasing
it's on NFL.com. It's like on every
sure,
football
but it's
page.
Not going to be in their stadium anymore. They're erasing it from the stadium.
But you can't erase what actually happened in that regard.
They're trying to.
You can, okay. I don't know what they're doing here. Why are they okay with it last year and now the new stadium? It's like, well, now we need to care about this.
My guess was it was.
He's been dead for how many years now? 2, 3?
When did O.J. Simpson die?
3, 4 years ago? Like, why now specifically?
2 years, 2024.
Just because we got a stadium relaunch, I don't really understand what we're, that's all I'm saying is I don't understand what we're doing here.
That's a fair take. That's a fair take. I just chuckled at like, wait, that, oh, now, okay.
I'm terrified to post a poll question if Marcus Mariota commits murder.
Don't do that poll question. Don't
okay,
do it.
All right. I won't do it.
I also love how people are like, you know, what a brave decision by the Bills. Like, dude, they've let this guy be on. That happened in the mid-90s, man. Yeah. This guy's been a piece of ass forever.
Well, and no shocking development. The Bills get a new high-end great stadium, which, although it doesn't have a roof, what people don't talk about is how they've structured it to block wind and limit the amount of snow that's actually going to end up impacting the game.
It'll have heated seats, a heated field, all of that stuff.
So I'm a candy ass for asking for a dome. The Bills are literally building a domeless stadium that heats everything so it melts and wind no longer impacts. Almost like they're doing an outdoor dome. Almost like I'm right, but nobody wants to admit it. The ticket prices are egregious. People are irate how much they're charging for the tickets.
You get a new stadium, that's what happens. Their lowest ticket to their week two opener, $643 at the top of the stadium. Which, I mean, that's, you know.
Dude, that's also, it's a big stadium. Have you seen it?
It's a big stadium. I would also ask, like, where do they go a year from now? Because you're going to get that novelty of year one of a new stadium that'll drive it. Like, is this how it always is? And a lot of that has to do with how the team plays and all of that. But ultimately, demand is going to drive what the ticket prices are. But I have seen their fans very upset about the ticket prices. And O.J. Simpson is off their Wall of Fame. Look at the Bills. They're in the news multiple times. Let's find out more about the Blazer Arena deal. Where are we at? How concerned should we be? Where does it go from here? John Isaacs will join us coming up next, and we'll give you his background. And he's going to hop on and give us the full intel on that situation. That's next, 105.1 FM The Fam. All right, we got an interview we're excited for. But before we get to that,
we made it. Jaylen Brown, here we go. Trey Murphy, welcome. Get ready to learn Portland, buddy.
Not doing that to anybody. There is a bit of news out of the basketball world, and that is we have re-signed a player. A player has been re-signed, ladies and gentlemen.
How about that?
Robert Williams, Time Lord himself, has agreed to sign a 3-year, $44 million contract extension to return to the Portland Trailblazers.
Suck it, Lakers.
Also, Young Hansen not playing for the next 3 years. Really cool. Glad we used a first-round pick on that guy. We'll digest more to that news at the top of the hour because that is a big move that we weren't sure whether it was going to happen or not. And now a little bit of the picture makes sense on how this is all going to look.
We could ask our guests. We could just start it off with
basketball. That's a good point. Maybe we can do that. Also, in 3 years, will that be the last year the Blazers are playing in Portland before they move to Kalamazoo? Joining us now is John Isaacs, a friend of the program. He's a P1, so excited to have him on. He is the executive vice president of public affairs for the Portland Metro Chambers, and you can find him on Twitter at John Isaacs OR. John, grade the contract. Robert Williams, 3 years, $44 million. How we like the deal?
I would give that an A. I'm really happy to hear that. I learned about that just now from you guys. I hadn't read the news yet, and of course, I would say, hopefully we get the Robert Williams of the last season and not the Robert Williams of the seasons before, who hardly played. So we saw what he could do last year. I mean, he was great. He's a huge part of the team. So I'm happy to hear that.
I love to hear a non-sports guy be a ball knower. That makes me really happy.
He's a noted youth baseball coach too, John Isaacs. Okay.
Well, okay. Then let's grade the Ja trade real quick before we get into the city details.
Ooh, yeah.
Let's grade the trade. Ja Morant for Jeremy Grant and, Chris Murray.
Let's just say I have a lot of questions about that trade.
And incomplete for now. Let's wait and see on that.
I read the ESPN analysis that sort of tried to make an argument for it of why we'd have 3-point guards. I guess maybe we'd play Scoot off the ball. But, you know, I'm not going to comment on any of the other stuff that Bill Oram wrote about. I just don't understand why we need 3-point guards on our team. So, especially after Scoot played last year. As you guys can see, you're giving me one of my life dreams of getting to be on the radio and talk about the Blazers.
This is perfect. This is why we would have had you on. Let's get to the important issues, John, because I know, like, it's a very complicated time in Portland for fans. There's a big split about the new ownership and how is it looking and what is the future of the team. I got a columnist telling me they're going to leave. I got other people saying they're doomed. This isn't going to happen. So we wanted to bring you on and understand the process a little bit more and just kind of where we're at. And so that's kind of where I'll start. There seems to be five alarm fires all around me in this doomsday scenario out there. Is that the feeling you have? Where are we at and how concerned should we be right now about where the process is at?
Well, I hope to bring some calm to the conversation today, and I don't want to give the impression that we shouldn't be concerned that the Blazers may leave our market after 2030. I don't want to give that impression. I also don't think that it is a a tremendous risk as long as we can keep our heads together, approach this like a business transaction, and kind of avoid all of the ancillary noise that just is out there with any big decision that anyone has to make anymore. It's impossible to get through a process like this calmly in our current environment without, you know, just, you know, crazy hyperbole being thrown around by various groups. The reality is we have a pretty solid, you know, framework of a proposal on a table that's, you know, just from a dollars and cents perspective, an exceptionally good deal for a city when you're being asked to only pitch in 20% of a renovation for a what should be a world-class entertainment facility that we own. If someone came to you and said, hey, you can renovate your house for, you know, 20%, we'll pay for 80% for you, you would take that deal. And that's essentially what we're looking at here. It's got to go through a process. There's lots of leaders involved who want to think deeply and make smart decisions. So we just need to be patient and let it go through the process. The mayor did mention at our event last week that he's a little concerned it's not moving fast enough. I don't know exactly what that means, but that's a little bit of a concern. But the process needs to play out. And where it's at right now is we all know, and really the thing that is the biggest, I think, discussion point in this is the use of funds from the Portland Clean Energy Fund. That needs to be approved as a recommendation by the Portland Clean Energy Fund Committee. So we're not even at the city council level yet. We're at that level. And that is an independent committee. They make their own decisions. And I have to say, you know, that's a pretty serious group. They really have made, as the fund has become mature, and it has really good staff and a strong grants committee there, they really take their time to make sound decisions. So we need to give them the space to do that.
Yeah. If they say no ultimately and decide that, what's the pivot from there for the funds?
That's a good question, but I mean, that there would be a pivot. I mean, that's the other thing I think is important. If, you know, if you look at the city's allocation comes from three sources. And the one thing I think I want to say here on the air is that anyone listening to this who's a Portland taxpayer is not being asked to put any money into it. Okay. You, if you are listening, you are not going to put any of your taxes into this investment in the Moda Center. The three sources are A, you know, just $50 million from the sale of the franchise. They're just proposing to put that right back into the arena. The second source is taxes on activity at, in and around the arena and the arena district, whatever that becomes in the future. As you go see a concert there, or like when my kids go with my dad to see the monster truck show every year, which they can never get me to go to. I'm glad my dad loves that. My kids love going to their grandfather. The taxes they pay will go back into that, right? So that's the second source. And then the third is the Portland Clean Energy Fund. If the PSEF funds are not approved, I am optimistic they will be. Then yeah, we'll have to have a discussion about another source for that, but it's not the whole thing. And so even that wouldn't be catastrophic. I think the biggest thing that we have to focus on, though, is getting this done in a time frame in which a renovation can happen in a schedule that works for both the franchise, for the fire, you know, other tenants of the arena. Plus, we have the Women's Final Four coming in 2030, right. And we want to have all of this done by that time, too. So.
Yeah. A lot of balls in the air. We're talking with John Isaacs. Yeah. He is the Executive Vice President of Public Affairs, Portland Metro Chambers, at John Isaacs OR on Twitter. Now, your group was, when we played some audio from it, you guys put on the event with Tom Dundon last Wednesday, and it was a big deal for him to come and talk in front of a crowd. And it was interesting to hear from some people there of, man, this guy doesn't seem to care about the city at all. He's just this straight-shooting business guy. There's no empathy whatsoever. He's saying we're not going to pay for it. The taxes are, you know, all of this is in place. That's the tax that we're paying. I'm just curious, as you were behind the scenes putting this on, what your big takeaways from that event was and how it was received, I guess, from a fan standpoint and the noise that was going on around the arena as you had protesters outside as everybody was walking in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to really talk about the protesters. I just, you know, they're just not really focused on the facts here. I think that's just a lot of, you know, political noise. Our event, first of all, was great. And Tom Dundon wasn't the only speaker. We had, you know, the opening presenter was the executive director of Albina Vision Trust, which is the primary developer of that neighborhood. It's bringing back a neighborhood that the construction of the Memorial Coliseum was actually a part of displacing. So, you know, it's kind of a cool story about the renovation of the Moda Center. Winta made the case that, you know, we're not going to have an albino vision without the Moda Center. It's always been an essential part of it. We also had a great discussion from four of our most important elected officials. Tom Dundon, of course, was the star of the show. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend, you know, we were like everyone else. We wanted to hear what he had to say. We were meeting him for the first time, right? We invited him into our event. And, you know, presented a great audience for him to speak with. And of course, we would have liked to have him say more. But I still think he said things that are really important for us to think about, even though he was a man of few words. And I think my biggest takeaway is that for him, whether, you know, for better or worse, whatever anyone thinks about it, we'd all love him to talk about how much he loves Portland right now. That's not going to happen. This for him is a business transaction that he wants to get done. And you know, that was just my takeaway. This is a non-emotional business transaction. He wants a good deal for his business. He's there, the primary tenant of a building. The state money that's already been approved requires a 20-year lease from the Blazers. So we know that question's already been answered. If we get all of the financing approved, the Blazers are in for a 20-year lease because the state funds won't even be released until that's done. So I encourage folks to think of it that way. If you are a business owner, you are the biggest tenant of any building. You are ready to commit 20 years as the primary tenant. You want to know the building's going to be taken care of, right? No one's going to re-up a lease in a building, whether it's an arena or a commercial building, that the owners are not making investments to keep a first-class arena that you can operate a successful business in. And that is the way he's approaching it. And I know that we love the Blazers. I mean, I've been a Blazers fan since 1980. That was my first Blazers game, guys. Okay, they are part of this city to our heart, and we want an owner who loves us and loves them. Right now, it's not going to be that way. We need to get a solid deal done for both the community and all of the tenants of the Moda Center. You know, we're so focused on the Blazers, we don't talk about the Fire. We don't talk about all of the world-class shows that come here. We want to be a world-class city. We need to have a world-class arena. And I think you guys make the point so well all the time. You know, if we don't do this, we own the arena, okay? And this is our state's only major world-class arena. We know from an independent report the city did that it requires just over $500 million in just maintenance, right? Just to bring it up to modern standards. We still have to find a way to pay for that so that we can have all of the things here. How would we do that in a scenario in the future where we lose the biggest tenant, right? I mean, we need to get a deal done with them the way any responsible building owner would get done with their major tenant.
Yeah. I know you maybe haven't had one-on-one time from with him, and I know you mentioned the meeting and how kind of short he was with some of the answers. But I also feel like in other settings, he's kind of basically pointed out that everybody thinks he's going to move a team when he buys it, and then he doesn't. Like, he's negotiated through stuff before with Carolina and what happened over there with the Hurricanes. Just kind of the cultural shakeup it kind of has felt to have an owner like this versus what the city had for so long with Paul Allen and the estate once he passed away, of just a guy coming in, no nonsense. He's not going to rah-rah your city. He just is basically saying, let's get it done. Let's have a great arena for this team, and I want to win. Like, how it's resonated, I think, with a lot of people around the city, both in a political standpoint and maybe business owners around the city that you have at least experienced.
So I think that this is we've had stability for so long, right, in terms of ownership, and we truly had one of the most unique owners in all of sports, right? We had one of the 10 wealthiest men in the world who owned the team. And it was really a passion project for him, right? He paid for the arena. They ran the franchise or ran the arena, no cost to the city, right? We had spending on our team that was commensurate many years with the largest markets because of that, even though we're one of the smallest markets. And one thing I point out is it also just kind of gloss over, the Blazers are not a money-making enterprise just from an annual revenue perspective, okay? They don't make tons of money in the years they do, and there are many years they don't. We never really had to discuss those things here because of our owner. And so we're good. We're just going through something that every other city has already gone through, both ownership changeover and renovation of our arena. We're the last, we're the last city in the NBA city in the nation to have this public discussion. So a lot of this is just transition. Just, you know, we're not super comfortable as humans with change a lot, if you haven't noticed. And so a lot of this is that. From my, you know, 30 years plus of being a Blazers fan and following the team religiously, I think we want someone who cares and will put a winner on the court. That's the one thing I know through all of these years when we've had our ups and downs, whenever the Blazers get a winner on the court, this city is alive like nothing else. So, you know, I look at a guy who's bought our team and just won a Stanley Cup, okay, with his NHL franchise. And if there was one time he showed passion in the interview last week, it was about winning. He said, I think nobody hates losing more than me, or I can't be in the arena when we lose, or something like that. I mean, as a fan and as a team, as a Portlander who wants a Blazers championship back here, you know, that's the kind of owner I want. You know, I want an owner who's dead serious about winning. And I think we're going to have to get used to that being done in a different way than we have in the past.
Yeah, we're super against it. We do love having you on. We appreciate you listening. Do you, real quick, do you have an idea of a timeline when the climate fund stuff will, they will decide the funding for that? Is there a timeline in mind on that?
Yeah, the process is, the city has transparently published the schedule. If you look, there's a work session scheduled with the city council. To their credit, they published that already. So all of this is scheduled to be done by the end of the summer.
Okay.
So, you know, this isn't something that should drag on for a long time. You know, this is government. Are they going to hit their deadlines? Not necessarily, but I would expect this to be resolved. And I am optimistic it's going to get done. It's going to get done in a way that this community can feel proud about. And that should be resolved by the time we get to, you know, end of August, end of September.
Okay, everybody take a deep breath. We got a ways to go here. Yeah. There's a process that's got to play out. John Isaacs, at John Isaacs OR on Twitter. You go give him a follow. The Executive Vice President of Public Affairs for the Portland Metro Chambers. John, we really appreciate the time, the insight on the deal this morning. Thanks so much. And I'm sure we'll reach out again as this stuff evolves.
My pleasure. And anytime you want to just bring me on and I can share my opinions about the Blazers, I'm game. All right, guys?
You got it. Thanks, John. Have a good one.
Okay. Take care.
There you go. Bye-bye. John Isaacs. Good stuff from him. Hopefully calming some fears out there about where this is all at. It's a process. It's playing out. Still got a lot of steps to go. Let's get back into a little long there. The news. Time Lord has returned. We got the mail sack in the final hour. More on the Blazers final hour next 105.1 FM The Fam.